This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And at 9:05, it's time now for Sports Saturday. Sports Saturday brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. By Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. By Security National Bank with locations to serve you in Witt, Coffeen, Irving, and Fillmore. By Midwest Basement Technologies. Call 618-372-7077. By the Huff Funeral Homes in Raymond, Farmersville, and Hillsboro, and by Kurt's 24-hour heavy and light-duty towing and machine shop in Litchfield. Here are the guys. It's Tim Mize and Uncle Ralph.
Topanot, thank you very much, and welcome to Sports Saturday, the first Saturday in July. Hope everyone had a very good Independence Day, and I guess, Uncle Ralph, supposedly we're going to get a break in the heat sometime this weekend.
Yes, better hunt up a light jacket for maybe tomorrow and surely for Monday. Get down in the high 80s, low 90s.
Randy Pringy pointed out, I hadn't noticed it out in our little foyer there. We got a bunch of bags of ice salt and a snow shovel sitting there, just in case.
Optimistic. That's what you call being optimistic.
A very special guest joining us in studio this morning, Mr. Dave Yokish, good enough to give us some of his time on this Saturday morning. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, I want to tell everybody out there to wash as many cars as they can this weekend and plan as many outside events, and I really don't mean that because of the heat, but whatever will make it rain with this next system that comes through, we'll be grateful.
Yeah, and you know, Dave, hearing quite a bit around the different communities about rationing of water already, and this drought has kind of sneaked up on to us because it just didn't start lately. This began back in May, and we just saw the faucet get less and less and less and finally shut off.
Well, it's really been the stifling heat more so than the lack of rain. I think 9 straight days over 100 degrees. And I mean, that's no good for anything, especially in the middle of the summer with all these outdoor activities. And Dave, longtime track coach, of course, that's your bread and butter. And these types of temperatures are really bad news, especially for runners.
Correct. And in relation to this stretch of time, thank goodness that we're so much more intelligent about hydrating, about avoiding heat than we were even just a very few years ago. I think the incidence of bad situations is much less than it used to be. We're better educated. We know better now.
Kind of like the concussion thing with football, hydration has really evolved over the last number of years. I remember hearing stories about athletes back in the 70s where they're dehydrated. I'd give them some salt.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that situation in the first aid room at the high school. The football players would file through and take their salt tablet.
Yeah. I don't even want to think about them nasty things.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very good.
Ooh, no. No.
Coming up at 9:30 this morning, we're going to have a chance to catch up with Dave's grandnephew, Eric. He is playing at AA, the Tennessee Smokies. They are the AA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs, left-handed hurler. He's going to give us some of his time this morning. But, Dave, I would imagine that's a very exciting time for the entire Yokish family because, like we were saying off the air, AA, you're just a stone's throw away from the big leagues.
Yes, and I had a chance to talk to Eric about 3 weeks ago on our trip down headed towards South Carolina. And he indicated, and you saw it in his eyes, he realizes that AA is a stone's throw away and could be the next step. You never know. Right now, if you look at, and I'll give away the secret, he's with the Chicago Cubs organization, even though we're on a Cardinal station here. But looking through the minor leagues for the Cubs right now, if they're loaded with any type of athlete, they're loaded with pitchers. Their young team at the major leagues is loaded with potential hitters and fielders if they can make it through. But really the strength of the organization right now is with pitchers, as I see it. And sometimes that becomes trade bait too, because if you want to gain strength, an organization will trade a potentially good pitcher to gain strength. So kind of a unique situation. But I think it'd be interesting to the listeners to hear about the life of a minor leaguer. We won't make it Cards versus Cub. We'll just talk about minor league baseball.
And it's definitely a different dynamic, obviously, than the big leagues, of course, but the travel situation and everything that goes in it, a lot of long bus rides when you're a minor league ball player.
That's for sure, and Eric knew that going in. That's part of life in the minor leagues. Certainly, it's a lot better than it was 30, 40 years ago in that regards.
But this is a good learning experience for a young man, because life is not always sitting down at the table to peaches and cream. You know, you have to have some sour grapes now and then, and it's a good training session along with the experience to come up through the minors and spend a little time in the pits, as we call it, and do a few things you don't like to do. It sure makes you appreciate the better things when you get to them.
And I would still imagine it's better than having a real job.
Yeah.
To Eric, that's for sure. To get paid to play baseball, it doesn't get any better than that for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream. Every kid who plays, you know, Little League baseball comes like, boy, I would love to get paid for doing this. And he is on his way to maybe realizing his dream of becoming a big leaguer. So we'll be talking to Eric Jokisch coming up at about 9:30 this morning here on WSMI Sports Saturday. But, Dave, while we got you in studio here, let's talk a little bit about the Olympic trials and everything track and field here as we get off and rolling on the first Saturday of July. I would imagine that Olympic years for a track man such as yourself, always an exciting time.
It's a fantastic time just to follow the whole, and I tend to watch not just USA, but worldwide, how the competitions are developing and trying to peak for the Olympics, and so it's a great time.
And the thing that always gets people's attention and excitement going is the men's 100 meter and probably the 200 meter, and I guess the big story that I've seen is coming out of Jamaica, Usain Bolt has been beat in both those events by a countryman.
Wait till the finals.
You think he's pacing himself?
I know he's a one-time athlete in terms of physique and speed, and when I say that, he might get beat because the Jamaicans are loaded. The winner, last name of Blake, and I can't think of the first name, is legit. He ran a 9.75 to win the 100 trials. That is mighty fine. He was 1982 in the 200 to beat Bolt in the 200. Those are both, I think, world-leading times. So Jamaica is loaded. Side story, University of Illinois had the first athlete ever to win the NCAA championships in the 100 and the high hurdles. He is from Jamaica. Andrew Riley is his name. And his 100 in the NCAA championships is probably going to be his last 100 ever, because his time, even though it won the NCAAs, will not make the top three in the Jamaican trials, so he will probably devote the rest of his career to the high hurdles, because Jamaica typically is that good.
Is that a odd combination of events, the 100 and the high hurdles?
At one time it used to be, because your college coaches picked out hurdlers that were big, tall, had good coordination, but not necessarily prime time speed. Now they've gone the other route, and I think rightly so. If they can find a superstar sprinter that's got good flexibility and has some hurdle background, they'll do the double with him. They'll get more points out of him too, team-wise. So it's becoming a lot more common than it used to be.
How difficult is it, Dave, you've been in this all your life, but how difficult is it to become a good or a competitive high hurdle person? It looks to me like it would be very difficult.
Well, first off, how high is the high hurdle?
Depends on the age you're talking about. For college, it's 42 inches for a male. High school, they run 39 inches. So there's a 3-inch difference. And I smiled when I heard your question, Ralph, because with proper warm-up drills, you can teach hurdle technique. Gillespie will tell you that 1 year at the county scratch meeting before the meet, I substituted in a high hurdler that had never run before competitively, and he got second that day. And it was based on the fact that I was teaching hurdle technique for warm-up drills. So it looks far more complicated than it is.
I guess the timing aspect of it is what always looks difficult to me. You clear this hurdle and you're moving on to the next one, and leg coordination, everything. It looks to me, and I guess it isn't really, but it looks to me it would be extremely difficult.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so.
I remember a few years ago being at Rochester for a basketball sectional, and they were having track practice before the session really got underway, and they spent a good 20 to 30 minutes just working on what you were talking about, technique for the hurdle.
That's correct. And when I was coaching in the latter years, all of the sprinters went through those drills because you were increasing a sprinter's flexibility just by having him do the drills. It just so happened that they were learning hurdle technique at the same time. And so it was all for the good. And if I ever saw a kid that showed good flexibility in the hurdles, or excuse me, in the warm-up drills, but he hadn't hurdled before, I'll take a look, see if they can do it. The secret of hurdling is to be fast in between and to be balanced coming off the hurdle. Picture yourself being chased by a mad bull, and you've got to clear that fence, and there's another mad bull on the other side of the fence. Well, you don't just jump over the fence and land and start over. You have to land with balance so that you keep sprinting in between.
Dave Jokas joining us here on WSMI Sports Saturday. We need to get to a break. When we come back, there was a bit of a controversy at the U.S. Olympic trials. They had a tie for the final spot on the Olympic team. We'll get Dave's thoughts on that following these messages.
If you're a farmer or an agribusiness, it's good to bank with people you know and trust. Hi, I'm Jim Miller, Vice President, Senior Loan Officer at Security National Bank. I specialize in ag lending, and Security National Bank's ag lending staff is experienced and ready to serve all your farming needs. We offer competitive rates. Stop by and see us today or log on to securitynb.com to find out more. Security National Bank, your hometown bank you can trust since 1932, with four locations to serve you in Witt, Coffeen, Irving, and Fillmore. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
And at 9:17, let's take a look at the weather forecast brought to you by Paris Frozen Foods in Hillsboro. It's the home of the Big Porky. An excessive heat warning is in effect until 10 o'clock this evening. Sunny skies for today, hot and humid. There is a slight chance for an afternoon shower. We'll have a high of around 104 degrees. Partly cloudy skies for tonight. Still a chance for some rain. We'll have a low in the mid-70s. For Sunday, partly cloudy skies. It will be cooler. Still a chance for some rain in the forecast on Sunday. We'll have a high of around 90. And an extended look at the forecast Monday through Wednesday. Partly cloudy skies and cooler. We'll expect highs in the mid to upper 80s. The lows will be in the mid 60s. Right now at 9:18, we have a temperature reading of 95 degrees. The weather forecast is brought to you by Paris Frozen Foods in Hillsboro. It's the home of the Big Porky. Sports Saturday continues right after this.
Kurt's 24-hour heavy and light-duty towing and machine shop now has a heavy-duty tow truck and can tow your semis. They have a crew cab rollback to transport your car and your family, and they can pick up your motorcycle. There is nothing they can't tow. When you need a tow, remember Kurt's 24-hour towing and machine shop in Litchfield. 324-2400. That's 324-2400.
Is your home moving without you? You don't need a realtor. You need the foundation repair experts at Midwest Basement Technologies. Serving Central Illinois for over 30 years, correcting bowed or cracked walls, settlement problems, or wet and leaky basements and crawl spaces. If you live in Central or Southern Illinois, they service you. Call 1-800-848-9805 for your local service tech, or visit them on the web at MidwestBasementTech.com. For money saving coupons, that's MidwestBasementTech.com. Remember, foundation problems won't go away. Protect your investment.
Farming doesn't follow an 8-to-5 schedule. A slow week is 60 to 80 hours. My land, livestock, and family rely on me. That's why I bought farm insurance from Auto Owners Insurance, because every policy comes with a local agent, a real person who lives right in my community, who I can rely on to keep my farm covered no matter what.
See the Bruce Webb Insurance Agency in Farmersville or Raymond.
And at 9:20, Sports Saturday continues. Once again, here's Tim Mize and Uncle Ralph.
All right, Tobinot, thank you very much. Dave Yokas joining us in studio this morning, and we are going to catch up with his grandnephew coming up in just a few moments here on the show, as Eric Yokas is at AA Tennessee for the Chicago Cubs, a left-handed pitcher. We will catch up with Eric here a little bit later. But, Dave, we wanted to get your thoughts on the controversy that was at the U.S. Olympic trials in the women's 100-meter. They had a tie for the final spot on the Olympic team. And I guess just your initial thoughts on when you saw that that had happened. You've been an official at many a track meet. I don't even know the exact number. Maybe you don't know the exact number your entire life, how many meets you've been involved in officiating in. But have you ever had something like that? Were you surprised you saw that happen at the level that it did?
To explain a little bit, in the fully automatic timing system that they were using for that 100 final was at 300 frames per second. That means they have 300 photos they can look at within a 1 second time. And yet the actual photo, which was eventually shown on the national media, truly was a tie. For that to happen with that time of timing equipment is almost unbelievable. If you had two runners try to tie, mm-hmm. they wouldn't get it done. The timing equipment I use is 5 times less than that, at 60 frames per second. And if I have one tie in a whole season, probably every other season, that would still be very unique. The one tie I had was a tie for second place at a sectional. And whereas in the IHSA, if there's a tie for second, you send both athletes. So that was an easy decision mm-hmm. for me. They both go. In this case, the Olympic rules say one or the other can go, but not both. And so they had to decide, and the one athlete decided to step aside to let the other one, and this is truly a side opinion only, but both of those athletes who are professionals have agents, and there's no doubt in my mind that there was some exchange verbally of dollars in order to who was going to decide to go and who was an alternate. And I believe I'm right that the one who stepped aside is on the 4x100 relays.
You're correct.
So she'll still be there.
Yeah.
It was such an odd situation. It's certainly a worst case scenario for the U.S. Olympic track and field team. But I guess my question to you off the air was, why did they even declare a winner to begin with? Why didn't they just come out and say, it's a tie?
That's a real good question. And again, strictly guesswork, personal opinion. Somebody got in too big of a hurry. And I know the national media and also the people watching, we want results right now. And when the photo judge looked at that third place tie, I'm guessing that he tried to make a guess real quick instead of taking his time analyzing it. I think because of the pressure of people wanting to know who made it and who didn't.
Dave Yokas joining us here on WSMI Sports Saturday. The Olympics will be coming up. I guess they begin the 27th.
That's correct. Late July, we'll get underway.
I guess, and of course, the big news locally was that Kelsey Carr did not qualify for the Olympic team. But Dave, at 19, she was on the young end of the field participants.
I think it was very important for her, in light of 2016, mm-hmm. to be able to experience what Olympic trials are like. I got to experience it as a coach when I went with Tunde Ridley to the 2004 Olympic trials. And when you line up going through the check-in line to somebody who's potentially an Olympic gold medalist with their entree of coaches and agents, it can be quite intimidating. And I think it was very important for Kelsey to experience that whole scenario this time.
And gymnastics, I guess you get a lot of, you know, the younger people swimming as well. But track and field, especially getting the shot put, the field events, discus, you don't see a lot of teenagers making the Olympics.
Especially in the throws area, they're simply not strong enough yet. They haven't reached the maturity level where they can add on the strength to be that capable. Although I will note that there was one high school girl who was fourth in the discus, barely missed qualifying. So it's very, very unusual in today's age.
So she's the odds-on favorite to win her state title then?
She graduated.
Okay, graduated already. Dave Yoakus joining us here in our WSMI studios, and joining us on the phone now is his great nephew, Eric Yoakus, joining us here on the telephone, a member of the Tennessee Smokies, the Chicago Cubs AA affiliate. Eric, thank you for a few minutes of your time this morning.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on your victory last night.
Thank you.
And where I might add, the one team that really knocked you around the last time you faced them, the Jacksonville Suns, you were able to come back and stay on top of them this time. So congratulations on another good victory, Eric.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Eric, I guess let's just start off by just kind of getting your thoughts on what it's like to be a professional baseball player, to be called the professional baseball player. Have you gotten used to it?
I guess a little bit. I've been playing professional ball now for, this will be my second full season, so it's definitely more of a grind than people really realize. They're always, you know, asking, you know, how great is it to be a professional ball player, and it's definitely fun, and it's a great job to have, but you know, it's long days. It's 2 to 11 at night every day, and you know, it's fun, but it does have those long times that you just have to grind your way through.
You don't know that I know this, Eric, but how's it feel to sleep on an air mattress?
You know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's gets a little hard. I guess even air can get hard sometimes, and it's not fun, but you know, part of being a ball player, we got to find ways to save money and find ways to sleep on things you didn't expect to.
When I found that out, because when I was at your Tennessee Smokies home game in Knoxville, by luck, I happened to sit behind the gal who owns the cabin where you initially stayed, and she was feeling apologetic. Said she got a call from the Cubs organization that said that they need to provide you a better mattress than an air mattress.
Oh, well, I hadn't heard about that. We actually still work with this lady pretty much every time we come home. So she's been really nice to us and has helped us out. And I didn't know anything about that with the air mattress. But we make it work. If we're pitching that, we have four pitchers that live in this cabin, and if we're pitching that day, we're given one of the nice beds that they have, and we find ways to work around it, so we make it as good as possible.
I was wondering if the listeners might be interested, when you have stayed with Boise and when you have pitched with Peoria, what type of setup in terms of who you stay with and accommodations have you experienced?
Well, in Boise, they have host families for us, and I actually came about a week into that season, so they just kind of assigned me to one. But from what I've heard is the day they get there, the full team, they have like a dinner kind of thing, and they each talk about who they are, and they kind of pick each other. So apparently it's a pretty neat situation how they flesh host families out there. And then Peoria is they have apartment complexes, an apartment complex that they set us up with, and we kind of choose our own roommates during spring training, find guys that we actually, last time I thought I had a couple of guys that I didn't even think were very similar personalities to me, and they weren't at all, but we became great friends, and it's neat to meet different people and that. So I enjoy, that's one of the things I enjoy is meeting all the different people and living with different people, and we change teams all the time, and it's interesting stuff.
When you go up the ladder, hopefully, as you are doing, how I guess what I want to ask is the competition level continues to get stronger and stronger, does it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the teams, right immediately when I got up here, I just, you know, I was striking out a lot of guys in the Florida State League. They were swinging at pretty much everything I threw up there. Here, they're more patient. They try to work the count, and they put the ball in play when they swing at it. So, you know, you have to make adjustments to that. I've worked on getting my ball to sink a little more, get ground ball outs rather than trying to just throw fastball changeups to keep them off balance and get strikeouts. You know, you just have to change your approach a little bit, and we have coaches at each level that help us do that. And, you know, I've grown as a pitcher so far, so that's good.
Eric Jokisch joining us here on Sports Saturday. He's with the Tennessee Smokies right now, the AA affiliate of the Chicago Cubs, a left-handed pitcher. And I guess, Eric, what I would like to know is, I would imagine now that you're pro and you get to deal with hitters with wooden bats, that makes it a lot nicer to pitch inside, no?
Oh, yeah, and I like to live on the inside half of the plate. And you know, I'll work it in and out. And in college, I was pretty much outside, 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 changeups outside. You know, I didn't venture inside at all. And with the wooden bat, it's a completely different story. When you fall behind in the count, you can go inside and get some broken bats and some weak hits, and that's kind of what we're looking for. So, yeah, I've kind of thrived off being able to throw inside now.
Like when you first turned pro and you're down like in the lower levels of the minor leagues, are there some of the hitters maybe who came out of college ball standing around during batting practice just kind of commiserating about the fact, boy, it was a lot better with that aluminum bat?
Yeah, early on in my career, the hitters were especially having trouble hitting with the wooden bats. And in the first half of Boise, you know, pitchers were pretty much dominating. They could throw about anything, and hitters weren't squaring anything up. And by the second half, you know, they were starting to get the feel of those wooden bats. And you know, I feel like by now, these guys have used wooden bats for several years now, and they're pretty comfortable with them. So, you know, it's a different style of baseball, but they know how to use those wooden bats, and they can hit them a long way with those too.
Proud Uncle Dave would say that when I watched you at Northwestern, when you would fool people, the aluminum bat still created a hit through the hole or in between the fielders. And now when I see you in the minor leagues, when you fool people, typically you're going to get a ground out. And I wanted to add in relation to Uncle Ralph's question about as he goes up the ladder, things get tougher. When he was in the Florida State League, he had 52 strikeouts compared to 16 walks. In a similar number of games at AA, he has, again, 16 walks. Only 18 strikeouts, and when you look at that, you think, well, how in the world? And by the way, as a starter, his ERA is less than 2. It's 1.61 currently as a starter, and you wonder how that happens, and Eric knows it's part of his growth and maturity. He creates ground ball outs. And I think the Cub organization has a statistic that indicates that. And he's really high on ratio of ground ball outs for a game.
And that's a good ratio if you're going to pitch in Wrigley Field.
You know, you don't
want to keep the ball on the ground. Eric, as you travel along and the competition level, as we say, keeps getting greater, and I guess the thought has to cross through your mind at 2A, once upon a time, that was a long, long step on up to the majors. But anymore, AA, if you're doing well, you're just a heartbeat away from the big club.
Yeah, I mean, any day a starter could go down in the big leagues, maybe, you know, not feel so good, be a little tight. And actually, our pitching coordinator was talking to us about this a couple days ago, and you know, he said it's all about opportunity and what the timing is. As long as you're pit, like he said a couple days ago, if somebody went down yesterday, I might have been the guy to be called up because I was doing well and my arm was ready. So that kind of hit me as, you know, it's that close. And as long as I keep working and pitching well, you never know when that guy might go down in the big league club and get an opportunity. So I just have to be ready if they ever decide to call my name.
Eric, I wanted to have you talk about, for the listeners' sake, what you do on a daily regimen from one start to the next start, because I was naive enough to think that, okay, you pitch a game, you rest for about 5 days and don't do very much, and then you pitch the next game. Could you give a sample daily regimen between starts, which starts today for you because you pitched last night?
Yep. Well, I try to, every morning after a start, get a little bit of golf in. That's kind of my treat to myself, is to get out on the golf course. But once I get to the field about 1 o'clock today, I'll take off for about a 30-minute run. Usually try to get some stairs in there, too. Then after I'm done with that, I go into a long toss where we get out to 250 feet, maybe 300 if we're feeling good. Just really loosen the arm up, get the strength back in it, and really work it hard. And then I go and do a lower body lift, and then follow that with some really good shoulder work, which is probably the most important thing to get that shoulder back strong and stay healthy throughout the long year. I mean, I've thrown 105 innings already, so the shoulder work is extremely important. And then the next day, so 2 days after I pitch, I have a bullpen. You know, it's pretty light bullpen. We try not to, you know, put too much strain into it. If we need to work on something, we do that. But just to get back out on the mound, more running, upper body lift, more shoulder work. The third day after you start is another long toss out to 250, 300 feet, something like that. Actually off that day of lifting, shoulder work, more running. The day before you pitch is your light day. It's kind of the rest day, only throwing about 90 feet. No shoulder work, no lift, just kind of rest up. Then you go out and pitch 95 pitches, however much, and start over again. So actually my hardest day is today, and the day we pitch is one of the easier ones.
Eric Jokic joining us here with the AA Tennessee Smokies, and something you hear a lot about in baseball today is the old pitch count at the major league level. Is that something in the minor leagues that is talked about a lot? Is it a focal point or not necessarily?
It's definitely there, and our pitch count right now is 95 pitches. In college, I'd go up to 140 and have no problem with that. But they used it, one, to keep us healthy, and two, to be able to learn how to get quick out, get out from the first, second, third pitches of the at-bat, rather than having long at-bats, trying to nibble at corners, stuff like that. And that's been actually probably my best, you know, attribute is I'm able to go out there and get quick outs. Yesterday I threw, I think, 62 pitches in 6 innings, and they needed to get some relievers, some work in. They want to watch my innings, so they thought they'd take me out after six. I could have easily gone 7, maybe 8, you know, but be able to go out and get quick outs, that makes you be able to last longer into the game. So, yeah, the pitch count's a big deal, and it's constantly on our minds, but it's good to help us get those quick outs.
I guess one of the big questions is, you're possibly, if you get called to the Cubs, of course, you'll have to hit. How you feel about that?
Yeah, we're actually hitting now in Double-A. Double-A is where you start hitting, so I hadn't hit until I came up. And it's, you know, I hit pretty decent for myself in high school, but it's completely different game now. You got guys that are throwing way harder than they were in high school, and what we mainly work on is bunting and trying to hit the ball to the right side, advance runners, stuff like that. And you know, I've gotten all my bunts except one down, so I'm pretty proud of that. And only struck out once, so you know, I like hitting. you know, but I know my role is to get bunts down and to mainly focus on the pitching.
And congratulations on your sack bunt last night. To me, it was a key psychological momentum point in the game because the opposing pitcher was very strong until that inning, and he made the classic mistake of walking the first two batters. You were up next, and you were able to sacrifice both those runners to second and third, and really I thought it was at that point that pitcher recognized he was in trouble, and he just didn't react well or pitch well at that point.
Yeah, it's I was able to get ahead in the count. I was up 3-0. I know for that kid, he was probably, you know, trying so hard to throw strikes so I could get a bunt that he had trouble with it. So I was able to get the bunt down, and it started a 5-run inning for us, I think, and that was huge. We were at the time down 1-0, so to turn the game around like that and with a 4-run lead, it's a lot easier to go out there and pitch. So yeah, I'm pretty proud of that bunt, and the team came through with some clutch hits and helped us get a victory.
And as a starting pitcher, if you can get a bunt down or have the ability to get a bunt down, it might keep you in the game an extra inning or two down the line. But, Eric, I guess from a pitching perspective, you know exactly what's going through that pitcher's mind. You're 3-0 on the opposing pitcher. You're thinking, I can't walk him. I just need to throw a strike. But how hard is it to just throw a strike when everybody in the yard knows that you just need to throw a strike?
Yeah, it's pretty tough. I mean, the worst is when, you know, you're struggling to find the strike zone against anybody, and you hear fans and people saying, just throw a strike. You know, it's not that easy. We're definitely trying to throw strikes. It's just, you know, sometimes things get out of whack, and then your head gets in the way, and everything goes awry. But so you have to stay focused, trust your body to know what to do. It's thrown strikes 100 times, thousands of times that, you know, he did. He threw strikes to me after that, and I had to get the bunt down. I didn't get a nice easy walk to first base, but you know, it's tough to throw strikes. So you know, if you're a fan out there, stop yelling at
us. Eric, in your class now, you're at the level. How many games do you play in a regular season?
140 games. And then the playoffs.
And then your playoffs.
It's around 27 starts for pitchers, mm-hmm. if they don't miss any starts.
That's pretty close to the big league level. And I guess, Eric, another question that I'm wondering is, baseball is such a game of failure, more than the other sports. It's about how do you deal with failure. How did you learn, or maybe you're still going through the process of really learning, how to leave the game at the park, not take it home with you? How much of a challenge is that?
It's tough sometimes. I had two outings ago. I gave up, I think, 10 runs in 5 2/3. Just a bad day. I mean, a really, really bad day. But it's, you know, you have to know that, you know, you have gotten guys out before. You know, the next outing can be completely different. You just have to go and make sure you get all your work in. Don't change anything. Just trust what you do. And, you know, one of my biggest mottos, and my dad kind of brought it up, I'd found it before, is, you know, never too high, never too low, you know, because when you're having success, it can get really easy to, you know, get too high on yourself, be too satisfied, you know. So I tried to never get too low when things are going bad, never get too high when things are going really well, and try to stay on that even keel all year, and then after the year, you can be happy with your success or get that motivation on a bad year. So however things work out, during the season, you have to stay on that even keel.
And I think you demonstrated that in last night's game, because to lead off the first inning, they got three hits on you right away. In all the situations, I think they were on the outside of the plate fastballs that they simply mm-hmm. took to the opposite field. And you maintained your cool. You start pitching to the inside. You started with some off-speed stuff and got out of the inning with only one run, and then you dominated them the rest of the way. So what you just talked about, you showed to perfection in last night's game.
And yeah, I mean, I knew I knew I had to make an adjustment. They were just leaning out and flicking those outside pitches to the opposite field, taking the easy singles, and I had to start pitching in and working on the inside part of the plate and moving the ball around a little more. And it's a game of adjustments. And if things are going well, then you stick with it. But if something's not going right, you have to change something. And me and Jeff Becerro talk a lot, and we work on things like that, getting scouting reports on hitters. And Mike Brenly behind the plate is calling great games for me, and we're starting to work really well together.
I guess, Eric, if you could tell us a little bit about your pitch repertoire, your assortment, what do you have, how fast your fastball, the type of movement, those types of things?
I have all the most basic pitches that you've learned since Little League, the four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, circle changeup, and a curveball, and they're all extremely basic grips. You know, I have some pretty good movement on my two-seam sinker. I don't throw anywhere close to hard. I can hit 90, 91. I'll sit in the 87, 88, 89 range. And I'm working on hitting spots and throwing at good locations. I do have a good changeup that, you know, my bread and butter pitch that has kind of got me to where I am. And I try to, you know when to use that, keep them off balance. You know, it's all about look. I believe, you know, that it's location before anything else. If you can locate your pitches, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 85 or 95, you know, that you're going to be a lot better than throwing it down the middle at 100. So that's kind of my philosophy and the way I go about pitching.
The movement that you have, is that natural movement, or is that something that you've kind of honed over your career?
There's some mechanical changes that I made from college to the pro level that Jeff Becerro and I worked on. He had me stand taller. I used to kind of squat down and drive off my back leg, and it would cause my ball to move more sideways and stay on the same plane, they say. Now I'm standing taller and throwing more downhill, which causes my ball to drop more, which changes planes, and they can't just, you know, foul those balls off. They're going straight into the ground for ground out. So there are things that I've changed, especially for my fastball with the down movement. My changeup's people always ask me how I throw my changeup, how do I get it to slow down while keeping the arm speed up. And it's really something that's been natural for me. That's one thing that I've always been able to throw is a good changeup. And a lot of guys feel to slow it down, they have to slow their arm down. And for some reason, when I want to slow it down, I try to throw it as hard as I possibly can. And that was just a natural thing for me. And the curveball, you know, natural for a lot of other people, for me is something I have to work on constantly and trying to keep it sharp and making little tweaks and adjustments to it. So everybody's got their own little natural things that they have and stuff that they need to work on. So for me, the natural things to change up and everything else, I really have to work hard on.
And for us, it played the game of baseball. That little old baseball may be made out of a piece of horse hide, but it's got its own mind some days. And you go out there, it'll do everything you want it to do, and the next day it won't do nothing you want it to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Eric Jokic joining us here on Sports Saturday. Eric, you've mentioned Jeff Becerro, your pitching coach down there. Of course, former major leaguer, left-handed as well, if I'm not mistaken. Just kind of talk about what it's like to have a guy who's been where you aspire to be at the major league level.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff's been great for my career. I mean, I'm kind of his little guinea pig, I guess you could almost say, because he started coaching in Boise when I got there. So he immediately changed my mechanics, and I listened to him. I was willing to do what he wanted me to do. Lucky enough, he was in Peoria last year, got to work with him again, keep working on the things he wanted to work on. And then now I'm back here in Tennessee and he's here again. You know, I've been working with him now for 2.5 years. You know, I'm kind of his own little, his little puppet almost that he's kind of built at, you know, almost like a swing coach in golf, like Butch Harmon was for Tiger and Hank Haney and those guys. You know, I kind of take pride in being able to show Jeff that, you know, what he's doing is working, and he seems to like it in return. So we've got a pretty good relationship.
And that's a two-way street from my coaching background. It takes somebody that knows what they're doing to coach, but it also takes an athlete who is willing to listen and who can also change words and demonstrations into correct mechanics. So both of you need to be proud of how things are going so far.
Yeah, and I know he has aspirations to be a big league pitching coach, and you know, he's moved up the ladder as I've moved up the ladder, so maybe we'll continue to pitch to be able to work together and keep that for years to come. So I'm hoping for that to continue.
Eric, of course, every minor league baseball player obviously wants to make it to the big leagues. That's obviously the point. Do you allow yourself to think about what it would be like to be standing on the mound at Wrigley Field for the first time?
I don't, and I can't. If I do that, I relax, and I have to. For me, I have to be driven by something, and it's all up until this point. It's always been, well, you know, they don't think I have enough stuff. They don't think I'm good enough, and the you know, higher up, the brass people, they might think I'm the best pitcher in the world, but in my mind, I'm driving myself by saying, you know, they don't think I can do this. That, like, people don't think I can do this. So to imagine myself at Wrigley Field and on that mound, you know, that's too far looking ahead for me. I have to prove myself capable of doing that. So I try to stay away from thinking about, you know, Wrigley Field and the big leagues and stuff like that, because I got a long ways to go.
Your career looks like it would be heading in the right direction, Eric. You're in a with a major league team who is definitely looking at youth and moving youth up the ladder. So that all has to bode well for you.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, and I hope that they like me enough to someday give me a chance. And I'm going to continue to do my best to pitch well at every level they put me at. And you know, I'm just trying to go out there and take it pitch by pitch and let them make the decisions on what they think they is the best for the organization. And if that involves me, then that's great. If not, you know, I understand it's a business, and that's the way things are run.
Eric Jokisch, we really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for the time, and best of luck on your way up the ladder, and we look forward to seeing you in the show.
Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, Eric Jokisch of the Tennessee, the Cubs AA affiliate. We need a break. We're back after this.
When the occasion is special, the ice cream should be special as well. Next time you want an outstanding dessert, serve farmer-owned Prairie Farms Old Recipe Ice Cream, the all-natural flavored ice cream made the old recipe way. Fresh country cream, the best fruits, nuts, and natural ingredients all blended to create a classic taste experience. It's Prairie Farms Old Recipe Ice Cream, and it's available in your favorite flavors, including butter pecan. Taste the homemade goodness of farmer-owned Prairie Farms.
The 2012 Jersey County Fair is Saturday, July 7th through Sunday, July 15th. WSMI coverage of the Jersey County Fair is brought to you in part by Jersey Farmers Elevator in Jerseyville, Jersey County Farm Bureau in Jerseyville, Hurley Dodge Autos in Hardin, and by Whitworth Horn Gittin Insurance Agency in Jerseyville.
And at 9:54, let's take a look at the weather forecast brought to you by CarQuest in Carlinville and Jacksonville. You'll find it at CarQuest. Excessive heat warning in effect until 10 o'clock this evening. Sunny skies for today. Hot and humid with a slight chance for an afternoon shower. We'll have a high of around 104. Partly cloudy skies. Still a chance for some rain for tonight. We'll have lows in the mid-70s. And then for tomorrow, partly cloudy and cooler. Expect a high Sunday of around 90 degrees. Still a chance for some rain on Sunday. Extended look Monday through Wednesday, partly cloudy and cooler. Expect highs in the mid to upper 80s. The lows will be in the mid 60s. Right now at 9:54, we have a temperature reading of 97 degrees. And the weather forecast is brought to you by CarQuest in Carlinville and Jacksonville. You'll find it at CarQuest.
Hi, I'm Jim Miller, Vice President, Senior Loan Officer at Security National Bank. Farmers, it's time to get your spring finances in order, and we're ready to help you at Security National Bank, a small-town bank where we know your name with an established reputation in the area since 1932. We can help with all your ag lending needs. Stop by and see us today or log on to securitynb.com to find out more. Security National Bank, your hometown bank you can trust since 1932, with four locations to serve you in Witt, Coffeen, Irving, and Fillmore. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Since 1899, four generations of Huffs have been dedicated to serving families in Central Illinois. Today, they continue that tradition of compassion, personal attention, and professional service that started long ago. The Huff family has always tried to place the needs of their families first, to provide them the information to make wise decisions at such a delicate time in their life. Today, Dan and David Huff continue this family tradition. Huff Funeral Homes in Raymond, Farmersville, and Hillsboro, you do have a choice.
And at 9:55, Sports Saturday continues once again. Here's Tim Mize and Uncle Ralph.
Thank you very much, Tobinot. Dave Yokish with us in studio. We want to thank Eric Yokish for his time this morning from the Tennessee Smokies, the Cubs AA affiliate. We'll have Cardinal baseball coming up this afternoon at 2:15 as the Cardinals hosting the Marlins today. And Dave, I'm just curious, we heard Eric say about how he can't allow himself to think about the possibility of standing on the mound at Wrigley Field. But as an uncle, you certainly can.
I can, but I'm fully aware, and Uncle Ralph and I were just talking about the fact that the difference between success and not having success is minuscule, especially in the art of pitching. And so you have to maintain a mental framework like Eric is, that he's going to keep working to get to the next level.
Dave, I'm just curious, you've been around so many athletes at the high school level and beyond. Was it clear from an early age that Eric was this type of athlete, that this could be something maybe that was going to be a possibility? Or was this kind of a late situation, like in high school, like, whoa, he's got a chance at this?
I can remember the family reunions many years ago where little Eric, who wasn't any taller than this desk, wanted to go out and play pitch and catch with his dad. So he had that love from the beginning. In terms of how far that would go, you just don't know.
And that's what you have to have, is you have to have the love, because the people who wind up doing it for just the money or whatever the other reasons may be, it gets to them. It burns them out, it chews them up and spits them out. But if you got the love of the game, you can be around a long time.
You can only get so good as an athlete physically, but as Uncle Ralph said, then the mental part plays into it, and so that's a key that Eric is fully in control of now, and we hope that will stay that way.
And you know, that's so important as a pitcher at the major league level. As I said earlier, you go out there today, you throw the ball, it just does everything you want it to. Your next time out there 5 days later, maybe it doesn't do anything. That is when you, as an athlete, that's when upstairs the mental attitude kicks in, and you make that ball do what you want to do. And if you can't adjust to this mentally, then you got problems.
If you talk to the Chicago Cubs scouts, one of the big pluses for Eric on their sheets is the fact that he has the ability to get out of trouble. He's demonstrated that time and again. He demonstrated it in the first inning last night. About the time you think you might knock him out, he'll come back and get you, and in fact might finish out the game stronger than. And I first saw that on the high school level against Pleasant Plains. If any of the Springfield area people are listening, there was a famous sectional game between Pleasant Plains and Virginia, and Eric had pitched the day before, so he wasn't going to be able to pitch the regular scheduled game. Well, it rained. Not real bad, but it rained, and boy, was that Virginia field wet, really wet. And so it got delayed one game, and Pleasant Plains almost knocked him out of the box. And he reached down, took over, and they won the game.
Real quick, one of the greatest major league pitchers to pitch the game, Bob Gibson. If you got Gibby, you had to get him in the first or second inning. After that, lights out.
Yep, get them early. You might not get them at all. Yep. We are out of time here on Sports Saturday. Dave, thank you so much for coming in the studio. It was a pleasure. Dave Jokic, we thank him. We thank Eric Jokic as well with the Tennessee Smokies, the Cubs AA affiliate. Cardinal baseball comes up for you this afternoon at 2:15 on WQSMI AM 1540. Sports Saturday is done. For Tobin, Uncle Ralph, I'm Tim. This is WQSMI FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville, the station you can count on.